thanks. My name's Matt and I'm an addict. And to say I'm nervous is an understatement. I kind of equate it to a few years ago in recovery, when I was in recovery the first time, a group of us thought it would be a good idea to do a parachute jump. And I was sitting in that aeroplane and it was a real leap of faith. But, you know, I wanted to get out of that plane and the quickest way was to jump out the door. And it's all on video, and the fear, every time I watch that video, I get in touch with the fear. And this is really on that same kind of level. I feel terrified. You know, this is out of my comfort zone, to say the least, yeah. But my name's Matt and I'm an addict and I'm here. I'm 14 months clean. And I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for that clean time. I'm very grateful to be in recovery or back in recovery or in recovery for the first time. I'm not sure my first attempt was about me recovering as much as it was just a relief to be away from the drugs and to be clean. You know, I sold myself short on that attempt. And how I got here, I used drugs for a long time, and I was thinking earlier on, I was sort of thinking of all these ways I was going to start this chair, and they all went out the window, and all I've got is my experience. And it kind of goes like this, you know, when I was young, I don't know why, I don't know how, I'm not sure that I had such a bad childhood or I needed to change the way I feel, but it's kind of what I looked to do. I really, as soon as I knew about getting high, that's all I wanted to do. And I'll give you an example of how insane I was, even as a real young child in primary school. I think my brother told me I could get high by sniffing nail varnish. And what he actually forgot to tell me is nail varnish remover. You know what's coming. So I got a nice little bit of rouge out of my mum's kit. And honest to God, you know, I was pretty messed up. What can I say? So there I was with a bottle of nail varnish hanging out of my nose. And I thought, well, nothing's happening. But, you know, it gave me an headache and that was good enough. Do you know what I mean? Really. And there's many, many, many instances where if I got a headache after I took something, you know, I remember smoking some oregano and you think I'm joking, but it's the truth, man. That's where I was at, yeah? And I was convinced that if I had a headache, then I was stoned and I'd sit there going, yeah, this is great, and some Pink Floyd, you know, fucking hell. What the truth is, you know, I should have been out down the park playing with other kids, you know, but my brothers, it was like I was led into it, you know, I was serving my apprenticeship. My idols were my brothers, you know, my father was just, it just wasn't there for me. And my brothers were who I idolized, who I followed, who I wanted to be like. And I found myself doing stuff that I had no right to be doing. You know, no child should be sort of acting like that or looking to get stoned or, you know, pretending at being adult in such a, you know, with such grave consequences. And my progression was fast. You know, I went with my mate last night, he'd done a chair over at Purley, and he was talking about sniffing glue, and you know, my solvent of choice was gas, you know, lighter fuel. And I'd done that for a long time, and that was always, you know, until I sort of reached sort of 14 or 15, that was always there, you know, that was what I'd fall back on if I couldn't get any dope, you know, because from the moment I smoked a joint, I was completely addicted. There was no half measures. Every day I had to have a joint, you know, and it ruled my life. You know, I'd walk to school, I'd have a joint to walk. If I didn't have a joint to walk to school, I wouldn't go to school, you know, and, you know, I'd eat in a frenzied, you know, getting the munchies, I would eat, and I couldn't sleep unless I had a joint. And I thought it was okay. Do you know what I mean? I thought it was okay, and it really did. It got me through the day. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, something wasn't right. And like I say, the progression, it was fast. And I heard someone share the other night that addiction didn't just run through his family, it galloped through, and it's the same for me. You know, I remember sort of coming home from school. My brother was in had been taken to a mental hospital for a suicide attempt. You know, he's alcoholic, you know, really, really lost, and he was only young. And then my father, you know, he was alcoholic, and he tried to kill himself. And I'm at school, and I think, well, you know, what the fuck, this is my family. Do you know what I mean? It's like, but I couldn't talk about it. You know, I couldn't talk about how it made me feel. You know, the fear that sort of thing done to me, and so I just smoked more dope, and that's kind of where I come from. The progression is the progression. It does what it does, you know, and I couldn't stop using drugs, and it wasn't long. I remember, you know, my powerlessness took me to prison when I was 17, and again, it was a bit of a shock for me, because when I was like 13, 14, I didn't think, yeah, you know, I'm going to end up in prison, because I wasn't really a law breaker, you know, I wasn't a criminal, I wasn't running around smashing windows, you know, I was just getting stoned, and I got involved with some stuff, and I ended up in prison for a couple of years, and you know, and I had track marks on my arm, and I was already really lost to this illness. You know, it was written all over me, and you know, I didn't use for that whole time. I smoked a bit of dope when I was in prison, but I didn't use like heroin or anything like that. And I thought I never would again. You know, I thought, well, you know, I've ended up in prison, this, that, and the other, and I thought I won't use that. Okay. But like I did hear somebody say, you know, changing your drugs of choice was a bit like changing the cabin on a Titanic. You're still going down, and that's what I fucking... And I think that's pretty much the story of my using, you know. Obviously, I used again, and I continued to use for a few years. And in 1998, I was yet in another detox, and I was battered. I was so battered, you know, like, obviously no veins, the usual scenario, and just, but for the first time in my using, mentally I felt really unstable. You know, like you just, especially with a smack habit, you kind of, it becomes you, do you know what I mean? It's like a full-time job, you just got to do it every day, you just got to do it, and I could live with that, but then I started doing other drugs where it kind of really fucked me up mentally, and I ended up in this detox, and I was pretty scared for my own sanity, my own safety, and I was worried. You know what I mean? I was worried, and I'd done a few detoxes that year, and it all started when my dad had died, and you know, the guilt I felt around that was immense. I sort of dragged my dad through my addiction, you know, like you do. I took no prisoners, and my mum also, you know, and lots of my family. And like I say, it was galloping through anyway with my using brothers. And so I felt a lot of guilt, you know, financially, I'd ruined my dad, and emotionally, he was a mess. And I took it all on board. It was all my fault, obviously, you know. And so that sort of spurred me into getting into detox. I'd done a couple of detoxes that year, and this last one, I just thought, fuck it, something's got to change. You know, I really thought that something had to change, and or felt something had to change. I didn't think I could carry on, you know. And it was put to me to go to treatment, and that's what I did. I sort of took a leap of faith. I ended up in treatment, and I got, you know, it was a 12-step treatment centre, and I was exposed to NA. You know, I had to go to meetings, and we was in the treatment centre, and everyone was shuffling off to meetings together, and I really felt a sense of, like, I belong somewhere. I really felt like a part of something. Even though we was in treatment, you know, it was very real. It was nuts, early recovery. It was crackers. I won't even go there because I'm just embarrassed. But what was good, you know, I was getting a day clean, one day after another, after another, after another, and, you know, I was getting a better perspective, and I was realising that I didn't have to take drugs. Fucking hell, what a revelation, man. Priceless, and I was learning, you know, I was learning, slowly I was learning, and I was given the gift of recovery, you know, like, I was given the gift of recovery, and And so it went on, you know. But like I said at the beginning, I was grateful to be clean, but I still felt very, very different. You know, I'd really parented myself as a kid. I was out there, and I was just, I didn't have any sort of like adult influences. I just sort of made my own decisions. And I think I brought that into that recovery, you know, where like, don't ask for help. Don't actually say you feel like using. Don't say that you feel fear or anything. You know, just run around, see how many girls you can sleep with, prove that you're a man, blah, blah, blah. Some right nutty sort of stuff. And subsequently I used, you know, I used. And my relapse kind of looks like this, very subtle. It started with a pill off the doctor, you know, codeine, like a DF-118 off the doctor, and for a wrist injury I'd done at football. Really sort of over-medicated myself. Got them home. I doubled up on the dosage, obviously, because, like, you know, I need some, you know, anyway. So I doubled up on the dosage, and I got a little, you know, I got a little gouchy one off it. It was nice with a roll up, and and what I'd done was I actually hid the box. Right? I thought fucking hell. I hid the box, and I hid it deep, right, deep undercover, in my airing cupboard, in my flat. And my girlfriend at the time, she was in recovery. She is in recovery still, and she's not my girlfriend anymore. But she I don't know what she was doing in my airing cupboard. But anyway, she found this box, and she confronted me straight away. And immediately, I was like, you know, it doesn't mean anything. What do you mean I'm hiding the box? You know, like, the fuck. So I think I'd opened up my illness, and I wasn't being very vigilant. And the damage was done. In all seriousness, the damage was done from that day, because I didn't actually use again for probably like a year. It's very vague. But then I began on holiday, and I thought, oh, I'll just have a Valium, you know. And there it is, the progression. A year later, I have a Valium for a short fucking flight to Spain. And I'm not even scared of flying. Do you know what I mean? So when I woke up, I thought, well, that was all right, you know. Like, and anyway, so I came back from India one day, and I thought, you know, I just got on the phone. I had my mate's landline in my head. It was like 699 da 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 da, and it was in my head. I thought, I'll just give him a ring, see how he's doing. Like, proper junkie. He's never had recovery, never will, right? And he's quite happy with that, right? And so I phoned, all right, Kev, aid. Yeah, you know, 10 minutes later, he was in my car, and I was scoring a bit of both, and I got home, and I used, and it scared the life out of me, and I didn't tell no one. I was in recovery. All my friends were in recovery. You know, I went to meetings, lots of meetings. And I didn't tell anyone, and what I'd done was I didn't use again. It terrified the life out of me, and I buried this secret, and it came back to bite me on the arse, because then I was stuck between a rock and a hard place. I couldn't jump off, I couldn't get honest, and through not being able to get honest, my self-worth was just on the floor. When anyone would talk about clean time, go and talk to Matt, you know, he's 6 years clean, I would just, a little bit of me would die, you know. And one thing led to another. I used on the secret, I used on the shame, I used on the guilt, and I got an habit back. And you know, someone in the room half put it on me. I said no straight away. No, I haven't been using. But then a couple of days later, you know, I was able to get honest. And that kind of, like, for a secret that I had in recovery for so many years, because that's what it was in the end, it was years, I've got this habit, you know, and what I actually done was I phoned a guy that I worked with one, you know, a couple of days after it was coming to a head, and this is someone in recovery, and I phoned him out. I said, Mark, I said, and I couldn't get the words out. You know what I mean? I just couldn't get the words out, and then I was like, my tears just started to come now. The tears. I said, Mark, I said, I'm using. I've got an habit. I don't know what to do. Opened me up. I was in bits, but I was relieved as well. I was relieved. Within a second, I was relieved. And he said, give me 5 minutes, I'll call you back. And then my door went, and it was him, you know, literally within 5 minutes, he was on the door. And at first thing, because I was in bits, he just said, what can I, and he said, give me a hug. And that's what he done. He just gave me this hug, and I was like, incapable of controlling my emotions at this point. And then he said, what can I do for you? And, you know, and I started this journey of recovery again. I went to a meeting and got a white key ring. And I used again, you know, 30 days later, classic, used again. And I thought, I really don't want to be doing this. You know, it was a classic step one, using against my will. And 30, and I got another white key ring. I owned it, thank God. And I got another white key ring, and I haven't used since then. And, you know, amazing things are happening. You know, just how I feel about myself. Forget anything that I've got on the outside. Forget about it, right? I was dying inside, yeah? And I can sit here. The fear ain't on me now, yeah? I'm an addict. My name is Matt. That is it, you know, and I'll leave it there. Thanks.